Welcome to the Boost VC podcast, your weekly dose of fun, informative interviews with incredible guests from the Boost VC network. We'll dig into the latest topics around venture capital, startups, and emerging technologies. I'm your host, Adam Draper, founder and managing director of Boost VC and a fourth generation venture capitalist. Are you ready to rock? Today, we're going to do a re-release of an episode with a new intro, which is this intro. So it's not really a re-release. It's more of a release of this intro and then a recording of an episode with my dad, Tim Draper, managing director of Draper Associates, from about a year ago. Now, my dad's special. He is one of the most enthusiastic people I've ever met, and he's 35 years into his career as a venture capitalist, and he still has a crazy amount of enthusiasm for the world as well as for entrepreneurs, and if anything, it's only built up stronger. And I think that's the fundamental thing when listening to this podcast, I just love, because getting to talk to my dad every day or every week or whenever I get to talk to him, really what it's about is just like you get excited. He has this amazing ability to get people pumped and excited and want to believe that they can accomplish anything and become more ambitious. And that's the sort of culture that he's pushed onto the world. In this episode, we talk about entrepreneurship. We have a couple little advice tactics where he told me a long time ago to just hit send. You can learn what that means. And about sort of like how fear is the mind killer. So I love this episode of the Boost VC podcast because, one, I got to talk to my dad, who also has been a huge influence on my life and established a lot of the values that I still have today. And it's just a good episode. So if you haven't heard it before, listen. If you have heard it before, listen again, because it's better when you look at it from the viewpoint and lens of enthusiasm. So enjoy.
All right, we're double backed up.
Because we've already done this, but we're going to do it again. Yep. We're going to ask the same questions with different answers.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And
Zuckerberg is still waiting in the waiting room. He's been there for hours.
Well, you know, we have a good waiting room in the back room here. All right. Today, we're joined by Tim Draper, founder of DFJ, Draper Associates, BizWorld, Draper University. Early investors in such startups as Skype, Baidu, Tesla, Cruise Automation, Hotmail, and most importantly, this startup of raising myself. I've known Tim for about 31 years now.
That's great. Good. But, yeah, that's pretty much the scope of it.
Yeah, but what my dad's referencing is that we recorded an episode and the wires crossed and recorded static for our episode. It's podcast problems early podcast problems of having a podcast.
It's an early industry. We're just getting going here.
Yeah, we're learning. We're learning as we go. Okay, let's start with, what is venture capital to you?
Okay, venture capital to me is a way that we can raise money to help entrepreneurs who can go out there and do something for the world that just opens it up. I am always pushing for freedom, and I think it's great to see venture capital be able to support entrepreneurs wherever they are, in any country, anywhere, to go out there and do something extraordinary for freedom. And my mission in life has been to spread entrepreneurship and venture capital around the world, and it's pretty far around the world now.
Yeah, I feel like your biggest addition to venture capital was taking it global.
Yeah, I think it was great. We were the first Silicon Valley venture firm to go into China, for instance. My father was the first one to go into India with venture capital. And we have set up this network of venture capitalists around the world, the Draper Venture Network. And we give best practices, or we all share best practices amongst ourselves. And it's a great network because that gives me an opportunity to fund a company that might be in Kazakhstan or in Singapore or in Argentina.
And you're obviously very passionate about entrepreneurship. What was your first entrepreneurial activity?
Oh, my first entrepreneurial activity was very interesting. We had an apple tree and I was about 8 years old and I picked apples and our driveway was about a quarter of a mile long. And I brought those out to the street and there weren't that many people that came by and we sold them for 5 cents each. And when people came by, I'd, you know, sell them apples and see how many I could sell. And then I'd go and I'd pick more apples and I'd bring them back out onto the street about a quarter of a mile each way. And every once in a while, I had friends from the neighborhood who would come by and say hi and stay with me, right, while we'd sell apples together. And at the end of about what seemed like a whole summer, but was probably a week, mm-hmm. one of my friend's mothers came over and said, well, so how much have you sold? And I said, well, we sold $7. And she said, okay, well, who has helped you? And I said, well, I guess, you know,
Jimmy, Johnny, Tommy.
They all kind of came by and they were all looking.
But so you put in all there. The hard work.
But I did it all. And then she said, okay, well, here, you got $7. There's one for you. And one for Jimmy, Johnny, Tommy, whoever else. And then she took the last two. And I thought, wait a second. So that was sort of my first exposure to socialism. And I didn't like it at all. So I knew there was a better way. Anyway, that was my first entrepreneurial venture.
It is funny that your first entrepreneurial venture is also your first run-in with socialism. And at that time, so when you were around 10 years old, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a baseball player. And then as time went on, I didn't know what I wanted to be. And then I realized I really do want to be an entrepreneur. And I had four or five interesting ideas for what to do. One was a submarine. One was digitized music. One was 3D holograms, moving holograms. And one was a stock market that was offshore. And I realized I didn't have the time to focus or the inclination to focus just on one and make that one happen. And so clearly I was slated to be a venture capitalist. It gives me an opportunity to dabble, which entrepreneurs don't get, but the entrepreneurs have that pure focus where they can make something really great happen. Now, as a venture capitalist, I'm kind of entrepreneurial. We start a lot of...
You try things.
We try new stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for the entrepreneurs out there, you know, you've been a venture capitalist for 32 years, something like that. As old as I am, years. And
That's right. I pretty much started when you started.
Yeah. And we're both functional. But what do you think the relationship between a venture capitalist and a founder should be? What should these founders out there be looking for?
So, okay, well, the founders should basically be looking to raise money. I mean, that's clearly the first thing that they're thinking about when they talk to a venture capitalist. Beyond that, an entrepreneur should look for a fit. It should be something where you're thinking, this person can probably bring something interesting to the table. And I think I have different partners who have different skill sets, but I think what I bring to the table is generally the ability to help people design their business models so that they can figure out how they can make money, because a lot of entrepreneurs have good ideas, but they haven't figured out how they're going to make money or how they're going to get to the end user and how that's going to work. And I have a lot of contacts.
Network.
Yeah, I have, right. According to these guys who did the whole research on networks, I have the number one network in all of venture capital. And that was kind of discovered. That was a computer model.
Oh, I remember that. That was a while ago.
It's a computer model. Yeah. Maybe it's declined and somebody else has risen. There was a moment where I had the number one network in venture capital.
What sectors are you looking to invest in right now?
So I like anything that the blockchain has to offer. I love that it can really transform the world in a way that the internet transformed a lot of industries. I think it's actually bigger because the internet had the ability to transform communications, information, software, games, a lot of pretty big industries. But I think there are the really big industries, real estate, insurance, banking, government. These are enormous industries, and they are going to be transformed by the internet. I mean, by the crypto world, by the blockchain and Bitcoin and all of the great technologies that are coming out of smart contracts. So this is going to be one of the greatest times in the world. And it's also going to be the most uncertain. And I know people are feeling that because it used to be this certainty around, say, government, that government was land-based, tied to a real estate piece of real estate. Now it's not so clear that that's the best way we can all be governed because we're all global now. We can actually move very easily from country to country, and we have the ability to, with Bitcoin, we can actually move it to another country and just spend it without missing a beat. So I think land-based governance is going to change really radically, and that's going to be a real shakeup for people.
Yeah, I think that the first thing that the blockchain did with its first use case, which was Bitcoin, was it made people ask the question, what is money? And then the next question that people are starting to ask, because what is money is like a very confusing, like something that is being changed right now, is what is government? Because it's suddenly like, what do they control if they're not controlling our money? And I think these questions end up completely evolving. That like we're so like thinking of the world with these written in borders, and all of a sudden it becomes much more elastic and flexible.
Yeah. And governments are, you know, federal governments are going to have to sort of figure out how to justify themselves, because what do? Well, they keep track of all of us. They collect taxes. They give us insurance of some sort. And that insurance can be your pension or welfare or medical insurance or whatever. That can all be done much more efficiently and effectively with no corruption on the blockchain. And so then you start wondering, well, what are these governments for? And then it's like, well, protecting our land. Well, you know, we may want to move to other lands, or it's such a globe that you're, by having some sort of a war or a feud with some other country, it's like shooting your own foot. So I actually think we've got some really difficult decisions that we have to make over the next 10 or 20 years, and they're going to be real challenges. The great thing, though, is we, as citizens of the world, if we have Bitcoin, we can move to another country and just pick up where we left off. Whereas if we own Naira or even yen or euros, if we go to another country, they won't accept it. And so we're going to have to figure out how to, you know, manage with fiat currency. So that's why I say in 5 years, people will start laughing at you if you try to use fiat currency to buy your cup of coffee.
I already like won't basically go to places that only accept cash because they only accept cash. Like I don't have cash. I just don't carry any.
So you're all crypto.
So I'm all crypto and, or digital. Like, or I'm, digital. But right. It's basically like I just can't. Like if it's physical cash, I just can't. Like I basically pay tolls when I go across the bridge. Like they bill me. I don't have cash.
Well, that's definitely the case. I think that's true everywhere. Nobody's going to want to use cash. I also think you're going to have a time where people want to pay in cash, and there will be places that will not accept the fiat cash.
Completely.
And people have asked me, I bought all of this cryptocurrency. I bought a whole bunch of Bitcoin, and it's just grown and grown and grown in value. And people say, well, are you going to sell? And I think, wait a second, I'm thinking of this as my cash. I'm thinking I'm not going to sell it. I might spend it.
I might invest it.
Or I might invest it. And I might actually buy more.
Yeah.
But I'm not thinking of it as something where like a stock that you're buying and selling.
There's no exit.
I'm not thinking of an exit.
This is the...
I'm thinking this is my use will be that I'll buy things with it. And, you know, I can buy a house. I can buy whatever. People take Bitcoin.
Yeah. So they definitely take it now. You know, you were well known as the you bought the Bitcoins at the auction. But I think also that you and I do things in Bitcoin that no one else, like you were the first one to ever really invest with Bitcoin.
With Bitcoin into a company. And it costs so much in legal fees to do it. But now I think you could actually do it where you invest in Bitcoin, have the company pay its people in Bitcoin, and in effect, keep a perfect record of all of that on the blockchain. And you could actually make it all in a smart contract. We did a smart contract with a Thunderbeam in Estonia.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first smart contract for venture capital.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that you do more than anyone else is you try it.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
Yeah.
And have a thesis on how it's going to happen. Like
there are some innovative venture capitalists that have done some new things with cryptocurrency that I haven't tried.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we really have cut a lot of new turf. And a lot of those Bitcoin fundings I made were in Boost Company.
Yeah. It was, yeah. Well, we thank you. We thank you.
Well, Boost really was the innovator there with just saying, we're going to own Bitcoin.
We're going to own Bitcoin. Very true. And very happy today
so far,
been able to do that.
So far, knock on wood.
Yeah. What's the most important piece of advice you think you learned from your dad?
Okay, the most important piece of advice I learned from my dad,
who was also a venture capitalist,
was it doesn't matter who is buying and who is selling, it's the personal connection that matters. So never feel embarrassed that you're out having to sell something to someone, because you can make it into a conversation. Now, of course, he did that so that I would help him sell tables to a political function that he was throwing. But it was also very informative. And what happened was I started by selling these tables to people. And then we got into other conversations and it became a really great business relationship. And it built on the relationship we had. And that, I think, is very powerful. So I think that may have been number one. He's given me a lot of good advice.
Mm-hmm.
And some, you know, was just through osmosis I learned about venture capital. And I hope some of that passed through to you too.
I hope so too. Pops's venture capital knowledge passed through to me.
And now he's pretty awesome. This is your grandfather, my father. He's 89 years old.
Yep.
And he is starring on Meet the Drapers with my daughter and me.
Still going.
And we interview these entrepreneurs, and his questions are so good and so pointed and so directed.
Yeah.
I'm still learning from
him. The network thing, the connection thing, is one of the things that you have reiterated throughout my life. And I think it's important. My first two real jobs were telemarketing jobs at Mail Frontier and at Boom Studios. Mm-hmm. All I did was dial and call and ask for support or ask comic book stores to get us into their comic book store. And I think it's been very valuable for me long term, more on the just dial, just connect with someone. That has ended up being very, very valuable for my general experience.
At the Draper Venture Network, we were all concerned that we were going to bomb each other with a whole bunch of email. And I said, well, let's just try it. And they say, well, what do you do? Well, just hit send. There's something to just hit send. You just hit send, all of a sudden something happens.
Best advice you ever gave me 10 years ago was just hit send.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm glad I passed
you, that. You did. And I wrote a blog post about it because it was so valuable. And I ended up being able to impact most of our startups with that blog post. So everyone just, because at the end of the day, like, People are going to read it. It's going to work or it's not.
Right.
But it was worth doing. And don't write 4-paragraph emails. That was the other part of it. Was like, keep it short. Ask me for one thing.
One thing at a time.
One thing at a time.
Yeah, because I actually use my email. I don't know if other people do, but I use my email as my to-do list.
And you just want to get it out
there. And I want to get the job done, move on to the next one, move on to the next one, move on to the next one.
So send 10 emails that are asking for one thing each.
Much better. Much better.
So on the blockchain stuff, you were a part of the, I was too, but as a downloader of music, the earlier P2P revolution that happened with Napster and Kazaa and all that. Do you think that there's anything that we can learn from that revolution that happened that is today happening with money? Like that was the music mm-hmm. peer-to-peer network system, media, music and media. And now today we're actually innovating on the banking system. So
yeah, from a technological standpoint, it is very similar that all of a sudden it's all distributed. There are lots of people involved. It's a way of spreading something of great value around the world. From a business standpoint, the thing that scares me is that when you threaten the status quo and their way of living, mm-hmm. they will pull out all the stops to come after it.
Yeah.
And that definitely happened with Napster. The music industry came after them with a vengeance. And they went as far as to sue the 12-year-old girls who were downloading music. There is nowhere that these people will go. I mean, they will go to all extremes to come after a new technology. Now, in general, the technology will continue. So it's for the status quo, that's all for naught. Because in all cases, when they come after you with the lawsuit, come after the entrepreneur with the lawsuits, with the government intervention, with the competitive threat, with all of the things that they do to try to make sure that a company doesn't succeed in their industry, it's not necessarily that company, but a company will succeed in that industry because technology wins all the wars.
Yeah.
Eventually, we all want that technology. If it's good for the consumer, it's going to happen.
I always say without Napster, there wouldn't have been iTunes, Skype, probably Netflix, probably like there are all these networks that learn from that experience. And then the interesting thing though is that it went from like this hugely distributed system where you're sharing peer to peer to like iTunes, which was a central system that was distributing it all.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, there's so many things that have come out of so many.
Mm-hmm. And then Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin's the best peer to peer network ledger system ever. It's just a peer to peer network.
Yeah.
And I think what Bitcoin has going for it, it's more global than Napster or any of those could have been. Skype is the best analogy for what I think Bitcoin could be.
Yeah, or Hotmail.
Or Hotmail. And the bureaucracy of money is so much bigger. Like, it's just, mm-hmm. they're not going to be able to get out their own way. And like everyone, all the consumers are adopting it.
Yeah, and all those governments that are relying on their own currency, where they want to keep their population down or their own currency, are starting to realize that they have a real quandary because they love controlling their people, but they also want to attract technological advances. And if you don't accept Bitcoin and you don't take ICOs, those great entrepreneurs and that money, they're going to go somewhere else. And so it's a little bit like whack-a-mole,
mm-hmm.
Where one country says it's illegal here. It pops up another country that says, or three more, that say, it's legal here, so come here. So you see China saying no Bitcoin, and then you see Japan going, hey, we'll take it. And you see
South Korea exactly
said
what happened.
No Bitcoin. And I was thinking, or they said no ICOs. And I thought, wait, South Korea, that's what your grandfather fought for the mm-hmm. freedom of. Mm-hmm. That's the free part of Korea. Yeah. What are they thinking
by trying
to lock down the ICOs? And then, of course, all sorts of other countries pop up and say, well, we'll take ICOs. here's how we're going to handle them, Singapore and Cayman. I think England is being very aggressive.
They're very fintech forward.
Yeah. And Estonia, I know, has been very active. So a lot of interesting things happening in the world today.
Well, now I'm going to jump into the lightning round, which is, I ask you questions. So lightning round. So we go, what is a skill that you take pride in?
Business modeling.
Mm-hmm.
It all started. I got lucky with Hotmail, where I kind of came up with this idea for viral marketing. And all of a sudden I built my confidence. And I just started
building the business model that built a lot of business
models. Built a lot of business models. And now I realize, oh, hey, I can do that. I can try this. I can do that. And it's been great. I mean, big companies, industries have been formed through clever business models. And I like the idea that I can help with that at a very early stage, and I can help the entrepreneur go in the right direction.
I almost think business model is the wrong word for what you do, though, because I've been able to watch you. And what you do is you assess what the fastest way to get the service to the user is.
Yeah.
But in a way that no one's thinking about it. And it's like, throw a bunch of bad ideas up there, and then like, here's the one that you should stick with. It's like, this is the new business model of the generation. It's really fun to watch.
It's a good, it's fun. Yeah. And I always like to get to the end user. That turns out to be, all the greatest companies in the world have end user connection. So the ones that go, hey, we're just going to sell OEM or whatever, then you start to lose control, and your OEMs can squeeze you down and the margins can shrink. We want to make sure margins grow.
Spread, grow.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at your biggest hits too, it's like impact through you. It's like very clear. It's like Skype, Hotmail. It's these viral communication networks. Like, it's sort of interesting.
Yeah.
Favorite quote?
There's that great one by Teddy Roosevelt, but that's the In the Arena. It's called In the Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that one. But I also like...
It's not the critic who counts, not the one who stands fear, by. Well,
Yeah, it's that one. Fear is the mind killer. Mm-hmm. And it's by Frank Herbert, who wrote Dune. And that's one where I think, you know, people need to understand that the media sells fear. People push fear so that other people will stay in their boxes. And we encourage, at least at Draper University, we encourage these entrepreneurs to break out of that fear, because you accomplish so much more if you're just optimistic and you go,
mm-hmm,
than if you're fearful and you don't go. So I feel like that is one. And then I have one, which I wrote into my father's book,
mm-hmm,
his book, The Startup Game, and it's anything is possible. So use your imagination, whatever it is, it's possible. If you dedicate your life to it, it's going to happen. You put all that work into it, it's more likely that it'll happen than if you don't put your effort into it.
So it's funny. My last guest was Arvind Gupta, who runs IndieBio, and he's awesome. But he quoted himself also, and then which is, I love it. I love when people have quotes that they can do themselves. But the second part, the first part of the question, the positivity winning, I think about it all the time that there are network effects to positivity. So it's not only like you're being positive for yourself. There's like this rub off, and then you hang out with the same people and you're rubbing off on all these people, and then you become even more positive. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And it, like, every single day I keep thinking like further and further on this topic. And I think it's really important. That's all.
It does. It has a ripple effect all through the community, and fear does too. So you can do optimism and spread it through the community, or you can spread fear through the community. Your choice.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's optimism, you're going to have a much happier world around you.
Yeah.
And your life will be so much fuller.
You're trapped on an island with only one food to eat and one game to play. What food, what game?
The game I'm playing is probably Risk. because I just love it and it's so strategic and it keeps my mind busy. And,
and you'll play each person.
You'll play yourself. And I'll negotiate with each person.
Wilson!
And one food to eat. It will have to be Whole 30.
Uh-huh.
Cows, I think.
You have one cow and a board game of Risk. Perfect. What's your favorite book?
My favorite book is probably my father's book, The Startup Game, although I've now written a book, so that's now my favorite book, and it's called The Startup Hero. I also have a bunch of great books that I recommend to my students, and one is called Bionomics, and it was written by Michael Rothschild, and it's about how economics is a function of fits and starts, just as biology is. And as animals evolve, certain things happen, and there are these ramps, and then there are plateaus for a while, and then there are ramps and plateaus, and it's very much the way economics works. And it was pretty fundamental to my thinking when I was about 25 years old. So that one stuck with me. But boy, when first favorite book, I have a lot of favorite books.
Yeah.
I read the Koran, the Bible, Book of Mao. By the way, Mao was brilliant for the first part of his career. And then he went on that long walk and then he was a control freak and he totally blew it. And you know, kept down a population of 1 billion people for a long time. So freedom equals money. Freedom equals wealth. So if your country is free, you are going to be a wealthy country. If your country is constrained and regulated and heavily taxed, you are going to be in a poor country. It's one of the great ironies of life. When you think you can control something and it will grow, it just doesn't.
Who is your favorite Archie character?
Jughead.
I've always been partial to the Jughead also.
If it's not Betty. But now there's a new Archie
TV show
called Riverdale, and Veronica's my favorite.
What is your definition of success?
I'm not there yet. My definition of success is when I have accomplished everything that I've ever imagined. And so I've got a long way to go. I sure hope I live a long time because I got a lot to do.
Well, thank you for being on the Boost VC podcast.
Great. It was a great pleasure.
And hopefully this one sticks. Take two.
All right, Zuckerberg. No time, right?
No. Maybe. We'll see.
Thank you so much for tuning in during your busy day to learn about sci-fi technologies. For more info on what we do, check out our website at www.boost.vc or give us a follow on Twitter and Facebook at BoostVC. A big thank you to Maddie Callender, Coy Lee, and Ben Lavelle for their support in creating and producing this podcast. A musical thank you to Melodrive and their AI composer, for our amazing intro and outro songs. If you need music for your digital content, check them out at melodrive.com. Lastly, thanks to Tim Hollowell with the Podcast Group in Washington, who did an incredible job mixing this audio. Boost VC is all about helping amazing sci-fi tech succeed. If you have an idea you think we should hear, get in touch with us at boost.vc/contact. And make sure to sign up to get notified when applications open for the next Accelerator Tribe. Also, we love to hear from our listeners. So rate us and drop us a comment on whatever streaming service you use. We would love to hear feedback. That's it for this week. And unfortunately, we don't have enough time for Mark Zuckerberg. But be sure to tune in next week when he's available. This is Adam Draper signing off. Pew, pew, pew.